You ever plan your future with someone, only to find out they were planning your downfall? I was saving for a ring. She was scheduling hookups with my best friend, her boss, the neighbor, even the gay friend she swore was harmless. For men, 8 months, one massive betrayal. And when I confronted her, she laughed in my face, said I was predictable. I left that night with nothing but my name, moved to a new city, started therapy, rebuilt from the ruins. Then she called, crying, alone, abandoned by all the men she cheated with. And me? I just laughed and hung up. This is my story, raw, explicit, unforgettable. My Girlfriend's Ultimate Betrayal. A psychological thriller about deception, emotional warfare, and taking your power back. Press play, and never ignore the red flags again. If you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. The night her phone wouldn't stop buzzing. I still remember the exact sound. The vibrating hum of her phone cutting through the silence of our apartment at 2:08 a.m. It was soft, repetitive, persistent. She didn't flinch. I laid there in bed, staring at the ceiling, listening to it rattle on the nightstand like a guilty confession trying to escape. I told myself not to overthink it. Maybe it was work. Maybe it was family. Maybe I was just tired and paranoid from too many double shifts. She rolled over, murmured something about a deadline. Her voice was coated in honey, too smooth, too practiced. Then she shoved the phone under the pillow and pressed her body into mine. Warm. Familiar. Deceptive. I kissed her forehead like an idiot and told her I loved her. I was saving for a ring. I was planning a proposal for next month. She was planning something else. The next few nights were the same. Buzz. 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 Always around 2 a.m. Always that same excuse. Deadlines. Emergencies. Clients in different time zones. It didn't matter that she was a receptionist. Didn't matter that I knew her boss kept hours like a golf-playing retiree. Still, I didn't press. I didn't want to be the jealous guy. I wanted to be the man she married. But I couldn't unsee her smirk in the dark. The way her eyes stayed closed just a beat too long when I kissed her goodnight. The way her phone never left her hand anymore. Not at dinner, not in the bathroom, not even when she slept. The paranoia began to feed on itself. I started having dreams. Nightmares, really, of her kissing someone else, laughing at me, surrounded by shadows I couldn't make out. I'd wake up sweating, breath tight, and she'd be sleeping peacefully beside me like nothing was wrong. Until one night, something snapped. It was a Thursday. I came home from work early. She was out with her gay friend, the one she swore was harmless, who always gave me side eyes and too long hugs. I knew her phone's passcode. She had told me months ago, casually, like it meant nothing. I remembered it like I remembered our anniversary. 0426. My hands were shaking when I picked it up. I stared at the screen for what felt like hours. Then I unlocked it, and my life split open. Four names. Four threads. Four versions of my girlfriend I'd never seen before. Jake, my best friend since we were kids. Their messages were full of inside jokes about me. Naked photos. Plans to meet while he's on shift. A voice note from her giggling. He still doesn't have a clue. Mr. Harrow, her boss. He called her his stress relief. Booked hotel rooms under his company card. Promised promotions she laughed about behind his back. He even sent her money, thousands. Offshore transfers. She joked about using it for our vacation. Malik, the neighbor from down the hall. His texts were wild. Angry. Possessive. He told her she was his, and threatened to tell me everything. She sent back a selfie in my hoodie, biting her lip, captioned, "Only yours when I want to be." And then, Noelle, the gay friend. Not gay. Not even close. Their messages were straight up pornographic. She called him her escape. He called her a drug. They'd been together for months. All while she introduced him to me like he was her safe space. I couldn't breathe. I dropped the phone like it was hot iron. Fell to my knees in the living room, my chest caving in, the air too thick. My mind was racing, shadows of justice crashing down in real time. Every memory was now a lie. Every kiss, a transaction. Every laugh, a manipulation. I screamed into a pillow until my voice cracked. That night, I didn't confront her. I didn't cry. I just sat in the dark, replaying it all over and over. For men, 8 months. And me, working overtime, dreaming of a family with a woman who'd already buried me emotionally. The next day, I acted normal. Made her breakfast. Kissed her cheek. Smiled like the puppet she thought I was. But inside, I was already loading the next chapter. One she wouldn't see coming. Four men, and a screen full of lies. You ever see your life unravel so violently that time just stalls? It's like I wasn't even living anymore, just watching some twisted movie of my own existence. Every second soaked in betrayal and shadows of truths I wasn't built to carry. I couldn't sleep, couldn't eat, couldn't think straight. Her texts were still rolling in, like nothing had happened. She was still laughing at dumb YouTube videos on the couch, asking what we should do for date night, humming around the house in the same oversized t-shirt I bought her for Christmas. And every time she looked at me, I saw it. Her eyes weren't just lying. They were mocking me. She knew. She knew what she was doing. And the worst part? She didn't even try to hide it anymore. I started tracking everything. I created a folder on my laptop, labeled it Work Docs, password protected. Inside, screenshots, voice notes, bank transfers, GPS pings, even a few emails from her boss, that smug prick with a condo in the city and hands that probably still smelled like my girlfriend's shampoo. There were photos I'll never unsee. One of her wearing lingerie I thought she saved for me, straddling Jake, my best friend, in the backseat of the same Honda Civic we took to her mom's birthday last year. Another, with Malik, the neighbor, her body bent over his kitchen counter while she smiled at the camera like it was a magazine shoot. Her caption? When the man of the house is out grinding, the boys come play. My heart didn't break. It detonated. Noel's thread was the worst, because that one felt personal. He'd been in our apartment, sat on my couch, drank my whiskey, talked about politics and movies like he gave a damn, all while sneaking into her bed the moment I left for work. They even made fun of me in the chat, called me the husband bot, said I was programmed to provide while they handled her real needs. She said she liked my predictability, said it helped her keep the others excited, gave her a baseline to rebel against. That line, that was the moment something broke in me that can never be repaired. I started following her, not physically but digitally. I installed a tracker, read every new message, watched her spiral deeper and deeper into this world I wasn't part of. It wasn't about love. It was power, control, the thrill of the unknown, the thrill of manipulation. They weren't even romantic relationships. She was playing them against each other like chess pieces, getting money from one, pleasure from another, status from the third, and emotional distraction from the fourth. And me? I was the constant, the image she used to make herself look stable. The paycheck, the mask. I started changing. I stopped shaving, stopped working overtime, started taking pictures of her while she slept, documenting the mask of innocence she wore so effortlessly. I'd look at her face and wonder how many versions of herself she had rehearsed in the mirror. The obsessive part of me needed to see the pattern, so I mapped it out. A calendar, color-coded. Each man had his day, his window of opportunity. I saw how she rotated them like appointments. Jake, Tuesdays and Thursdays, gym sessions that ended in hotel rooms. Harrow, Fridays mid-afternoon, working late. Malik, Sundays, when I went to visit my mom. Noel, random midnight calls, always emergency talks about identity. I wrote it all down. Each lie, each laugh, each betrayal. I didn't know what I was going to do with it yet, but I knew one thing. I wouldn't be silent much longer. Then one night, she crawled into bed like usual, hair wet from a bath, skin glowing, wearing the scent I once associated with comfort. She curled against me, whispered, "I love you." I stared at the ceiling, didn't respond. My mind was racing, replaying everything, every thrust, every text, every deception. And that's when I realized something dark. She wasn't just cheating. She was orchestrating, curating chaos, mastering emotional warfare. She was a con artist with lingerie, a sociopath in stilettos. And I was just the pawn she'd been feeding validation to until now. The confrontation took you long enough. It was a Friday night when I finally snapped. Not in a loud, screaming, smashing walls kind of way. That would have been too easy. Too expected. No, I wanted her to feel it. The silence. The awareness. the moment when her entire empire of lies crumbled. Not with a bang, but with a stare she couldn't explain away. She came home late. Again, hair out of place, lipstick smeared, purse slung over one shoulder like a trophy. She tossed her heels off at the door, let out that fake little sigh she always did when she wanted me to ask how her day was. I didn't say a word. I was already sitting at the dining table. Laptop open, whiskey poured, one chair empty, hers. My hands were calm, resting beside a manila folder, so thick it looked like a court file. Her smile faltered. "Hey, babe," she said, hesitant now. "You okay?" I tapped the chair. She sat, slowly. Then I turned the laptop around. First, a photo of her with Jake, straddling him in my car, face lit by dashboard glow, tongue down his throat. Click. Next, her boss's email thread, labeled private. Harrow offering to cover expenses for a weekend getaway while calling her my favorite little liability. Click. Then Malik's video, grainy, time-stamped, and unmistakably her. Moaning. Whimpering. Saying his name. Click. And finally, Noel's audio message, saved from a WhatsApp call. "Don't worry about him. Guys like him are made to be used. It's not your fault he's boring." She didn't blink. She didn't scream or cry. She smiled. "Took you long enough to figure it out," she said, voice low, steady. Not embarrassed. Not defensive. Triumphant. I was frozen. My heart should have been racing, but all I felt was this creeping stillness, like the whole world had just tipped into a vacuum. "What the hell is wrong with you?" I finally asked. She leaned forward, elbows on the table, chin resting in her hand. "You really don't get it, do you?" she said. "You were never the target. You were the anchor. The routine. The backdrop." My jaw clenched. She went on. "I got bored, babe. You were so good. Too good. Predictable. Loving. Loyal. It was like dating a golden retriever with a retirement plan." My hand balled into a fist. "But hey," she continued, smiling, "you made it so easy to live a double life. While you were out there working double shifts to be husband material, I was exploring my options, building my own empire." She laughed then, genuinely, like this was her TED talk on modern relationships. That's when I stood up. I walked to the bedroom, pulled the suitcase from under the bed, pre-packed. Every shirt, every sock, every memory folded with intention. She followed me, arms crossed, still smirking. "You're really leaving?" she said. "Now, you're gonna run like a little bitch." I zipped the suitcase. "You think you're special?" she spat. "You think you're the first guy to get cheated on? Grow up. This is how the world works. People get used. That's life." I turned to her. And in that moment, I swear to God, she looked smaller. Not physically, emotionally. Like the curtain had fallen, and what stood there now wasn't powerful or seductive. It was pathetic. "You used me," I said. "You used everyone. And you're proud of it. That's the saddest part." She rolled her eyes. "Whatever. You'll be back. They always come back. You're not built for solitude." I didn't say another word. I walked past her, suitcase rolling behind me. She didn't chase. Didn't stop me. She just stood there in the hallway, in my hoodie and her lies, watching me leave the world she thought she controlled. But what she didn't know, I'd already changed cities, deleted my socials, started therapy, buried the old me, and I wasn't coming back. Not ever. Leaving with nothing but my name. There's something no one tells you about starting over. It doesn't feel like freedom at first. It feels like death. The death of the version of yourself that trusted without question. The death of the man who believed loyalty guaranteed love. The death of everything you thought was solid, turned to sand. I moved 3 hours away. New city. New job. New apartment. I left behind the bed we shared, the pictures on the fridge, the coffee mugs with stupid matching quotes. I didn't even want the furniture. Just packed clothes, my documents, my name, and my scars. The first few weeks were unbearable. The mornings felt hollow. I'd wake up reaching for someone who wasn't there, only to remember, she wasn't just gone. She never really existed. The woman I loved was a mask stitched from manipulation and lingerie. What I loved was the performance, not the person. I couldn't eat. Lost 10 pounds in 2 weeks. Started walking aimlessly at night, headphones in, drowning in podcasts about betrayal, narcissism, con artists, dark psychology. Anything to help me understand. Therapy helped slowly. My therapist, Dr. Ramsey, didn't sugarcoat it. "What you experienced wasn't just cheating," he said. "It was coordinated emotional fraud. She wasn't in a relationship. She was running a con, using you to finance her thrill ride. Those words hit me like a freight train. Coordinated. Emotional. Fraud. I wasn't dumped. I was extracted, like data from a breached server. So I started rebuilding. I canceled joint accounts. Changed my number. Scrubbed my digital footprint. Unfollowed every mutual friend, even the ones who had no idea. Let's be honest, someone always knows. I started lifting again. Reading. Sleeping better. Making playlists that didn't include her favorite songs. And when I needed it most, I found a community, online, faceless voices who had survived the same kind of covert betrayal. Men and women broken open by manipulation. People who knew what it meant to question your own memory, your own reality. They reminded me. I wasn't weak. I was loyal in a world that feeds on easy targets. And now I wasn't easy anymore. One night in therapy, Dr. Ramsey asked, "If she walked in right now, crying broken, what would you do?" I didn't answer at first. I imagined it. Her mascara running. Voice cracking. Telling me she messed up. That the others were gone. That I was the only one who ever loved her the right way. Would I believe it? Would I let her back in? Hell no. I told him flatly. I'd laugh. And I'd hang up. Because here's what happens when you survive psychological war. You stop seeing tears as currency. You stop mistaking chaos for passion. You stop giving CPR to relationships that were already dead. And then one night, it happened. Blocked number. Unknown area code. I let it ring. Let it go to voicemail. But something in my gut told me to listen. Her voice. Shaky. Tired. Not seductive anymore, just defeated. I messed up. I know I did. Jake left. Harrow fired me. Malik moved out. Noel ghosted me. I don't have anyone. I miss you. I was stupid, okay? So fucking stupid. She was crying now. The real kind. Not crocodile. Can we talk? Please. Just talk. I didn't call back. Didn't text. Didn't even block the number. I poured a drink. Sat on the balcony. Watched the city breathe. And I laughed. Not out of cruelty. But out of closure. She wanted to talk. But she never wanted to listen. Not to me. Not to the man who gave her everything and asked only for honesty. And now. Now she had all the time in the world to hear silence. Ghosts, calls, and the dead truth. Grief is strange when the person you're mourning is still alive. It creeps up in moments. A familiar smell in a grocery store. A laugh that sounds like hers. A memory that feels too good to belong to someone who wrecked you. But the weirdest part, after enough time, you stop mourning them. You start mourning the version of yourself who loved them. That man, the man who thought love meant sacrifice, who mistook routine for safety, he was gone. And good riddance. 2 months had passed since I heard her voice on that voicemail. I never responded. She tried again a few times, new numbers, burner texts, even emails with long, rambling paragraphs filled with half apologies and twisted nostalgia. Remember our trip to the lake? I still sleep in your hoodie. You were always the best part of my day. I didn't delete them. I archived them, digital ghosts of the person I now knew she never was. She wanted a reaction. Any reaction. But I was done feeding the cycle. I was different now. I didn't flinch when I saw couples holding hands. I didn't feel like a failure anymore. I felt like a man who escaped. And that's a different kind of survival. Not just crawling away from wreckage, but walking away with your mind intact. I even started dating again. Slowly. Cautiously. There was one woman, Julia. Smart. Honest eyes. Asked real questions, not just filler. On our third date, she asked me what happened in my last relationship. I told her the truth, the cleaned-up version. No pornographic betrayal. No four-man circus. Just this. She wore a mask for 3 years. I didn't notice until it was too late. Now I see the red flags. And I refused to ignore them. Julia nodded, then said something that stuck with me. That's not weakness. That's a skill most people never learn. Then last week she showed up. Her. My ex. In person. I was coming out of the cafe near my new place. Coffee in one hand, groceries in the other. And there she was, standing by the corner. Makeup smudged, hair up like she hadn't slept. For a second, time slowed. She gave me this look. Like she wanted to run to me. Like she didn't know how to breathe unless I let her. Hey, she said softly, almost like she wasn't sure she deserved to speak. I didn't answer. She stepped closer. I've been thinking about you. Every day. I sipped my coffee. She looked confused. I was stupid. So fucking stupid. I thought I was playing a game, but I lost everything. They all used me. Left me. There it was. The dead truth. She wasn't sorry she hurt me. She was sorry it didn't work out with them. You look good, she added, eyes scanning me like she didn't recognize the man standing in front of her. I nodded. I am good. Her voice cracked. I don't want forgiveness. I just can we talk? I smiled. Then calmly I said, no, just that. Not angry. Not bitter. Just final. I turned. Walked away. Behind me, I heard nothing. No footsteps. No begging. No breakdown. Just silence. The kind of silence that only follows when the ghost finally realizes the haunting is over. Just laughed and hung up. It was late. Not 2 a.m. like before. Not when her phone used to buzz with betrayal, but just past midnight. The kind of hour where nothing good ever calls unless it's dragging you back into hell. My phone lit up. Unknown number. But I knew it was her. Burner phone number 4? 5. I'd lost count. This time I answered. I don't know why. Maybe I needed to hear it one last time. Maybe I wanted to test myself. See if there was anything left inside me that could still be manipulated. There wasn't. Her voice cracked through the speaker. Hey, I know I shouldn't be calling. I don't even know what to say anymore. I didn't speak. I've lost everything, she said. Jake's engaged now. To some girl he met like a month after me. Harrow blocked me. He said I was a liability. Malik ghosted me after I told him I might be pregnant. I'm not, by the way. And Noel? He moved to Miami. Never told me. I stayed silent. She was unraveling in real time. The orchestral manipulator? Gone. All that was left now was the girl behind the curtain. Hollow, exposed, without a stage to play on. I ruined everything. I know that. I don't expect you to take me back. I miss who I was with you. And there it was. The only real truth she'd ever spoken. She didn't miss me. She missed the version of herself I made her feel like. Safe. Wanted. Human. But that version of me? Dead. Buried. Replaced. She started crying. Not the performative kind. No mascara streaks. No erotic undertones. Just raw, helpless sobs. I was sick. I didn't know what I was doing. I thought I was in control. I wasn't. I was spiraling and I broke the only thing that ever really mattered. I could almost picture her, alone in a dim room. Phone pressed to her cheek, hoping the world might reverse if she just cried hard enough. Can we please just talk? Just one night. No expectations. Just talk. And that's when I smiled. It wasn't joy. It wasn't revenge. It was clarity. She had spent 8 months lying to my face, tearing down my confidence, screwing my best friend, humiliating me in her group chats, treating my loyalty like it was some kind of joke. And now the joke was over. I pulled the phone from my ear, paused, breathed, then brought it back and said one thing. Low calm final. I just laughed and hung up. No screaming. No dramatic goodbye. Just a click. A silence that echoed louder than all her moans and lies and late night messages ever could. That was my closure. Not a conversation. Not a tearful reunion. A laugh. A hang up. A life reclaimed. People talk about revenge like it's fire and destruction. But the real revenge? Is peace. Peace that she'll never have. Peace that I fought for. Earned. Bled for. She may never know the man I've become. But she'll always remember the boy she destroyed. And the silence that came after his laugh.